Y'all, welcome to Up the Coast with Alex and Britt. We are officially on episode 7, which is week 6 of the 2024 softball season. Of course, we're highlighting ACC softball across the country, and we are rocking and rolling with where we are right now. But first and foremost, before we get started, Britt, cheers.
Cheers, happy Alex.
Midweek, mid-season, I feel like.
Right. We've made it. It's been a long, quick season.
Can't complain.
And you've got a michelada, huh?
Of course I've got a michelada. What's your drink of choice tonight?
Yeah, tonight I have a little white wine. I didn't want to get red, like get on my teeth and lips. So I planned ahead and
went with the white this season. So let's get into the Duke-Florida State series. So I feel like this was one of the marquee matchups for in-conference play for the entire year. Obviously, Duke is leading the conference in so many categories. And then Florida State is always just kind of that team that can beat you on any given day. Doesn't matter who you are and doesn't matter how they're necessarily playing. They always seem to put it together when it matters most. So was fortunate enough to be in Tallahassee for the games. And it was
on
crazy.
The call, Alex.
On
you
the
did
call,
a great
yes.
job.
Thanks.
Great job,
thanks.
Alex.
It was a lot of fun. But Duke took game one. And we'll get into a little bit more detail. But for quick reference, it was 10-5. A lot of offense for Duke early on, and Jalen Wright in the circle is so freaking good. And then Florida State took game two on Saturday, which fired me up as a fan. Of course, on the call, you're neutral, but as a fan and alumni myself, I'm like, okay, like, yeah, we're hanging in there, you know, hell yeah, like this is going to be really good. Tomorrow's going to be awesome. So Florida State ended up winning that game just by a couple of runs. Duke did threaten late in the ball game with a possible pitching change, which I will let you get into that in a minute. And then the chess match Sunday, Duke won 9-5 in extras. They went into 8 innings and they scored 4 runs in the top of the 8th. It was the first series win that Duke ever had against Florida State. So Claire Davidson for Duke has been so freaking good, Britt. She is absolutely swinging it. In game one, she was just a double shy, which I feel like double sometimes like the easiest thing to hit right. at times, right? Because you can hit a flare. Obviously, something in the gap is good. But she hit a home run. She hit a triple and a single in game one Friday night. Like, really good. And then Jayla Wright. Like, I hadn't really gotten to see her pitch as much in person because last year at the ACC tournament that we got to go to, it was really Cassidy Curd, and it was the Cassidy Curd show. And so Jayla Wright, she throws freaking gas. Like, it was like 69, 70, 71 down, and then just, like, throws that changeup in there, too, that off-speed. Okay. Like, it's pretty legit, so.
Yeah, I was wondering what, just being live from your perspective behind home plate, where you sit and call the games, what you thought about her and having the radar on her, knowing that – I could be wrong, but I don't think she was hitting 70 much last year at all.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll be honest, like from up there, it doesn't look like it. And then when you just kind of like get the feel, because we've all been there, like those of us who played know that sometimes when you're in the box, you're watching in the dugout or even on deck and you're like, okay, it doesn't look that fast. And then you get in the box and you're like, holy shit, this is gas, you know? And it's like just complete mindset shift of, okay, yeah, I've got to get on it. Like I can't be late, you know? I think more than anything though, her approach is getting hitters to swing on her pitches out of their zone. Like she will not throw you a pitch in the zone if you're going to swing it crap. And it was really fun to watch because she's really good.
Do you think that has something to do with how good her changeup is? Like hitters are trying to find something hard, even if it's out of the zone. Like, is she tunneling that changeup well? Like, how is it so effective? And why are hitters swinging out of the zone?
Good question. From my opinion, right? I'm not the one in the box, but I think out of the hand, it looks similar. And what I mean is because she's so drop dominant and then going to the changeup, like it is kind of such a similar pitch. And if she throws it similarly too with her release and everything, I think it's hard to pick up on because if you think about it too, her drop ball is coming in at 69, 70, 71 sometimes. Her changeup is still 61, 62.
I love that.
It's not slow. It's just off speed enough, right? And so anybody else, sometimes that's, you know, another one of their fast pitches if it's another pitcher in the circle. But for her, that's her changeup. And so it's just that slight speed differential there that, I mean, it's legit.
Yeah, it was legit. I'm glad you mentioned that the changeup's only like 61 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of starters across the country that throw mid, low 60s.
Right.
But if you're going to throw 70 miles per hour and then you throw me a 55 mile per hour changeup, I can hit that. Like I can, I'm going to be ready for the hard stuff, but if it's 55 miles per hour, you know, we can sit back and do something with it, but that's like the perfect percentage from a hard thrower. And she's pitching with confidence too. And we talked about it last weekend. I think that makes a huge difference. You know, confident in the circle and letting her stuff go.
Oh yeah. She was like good. Eyeing everybody up. Like you just know, like when you're feeling good and you're just like looking around, you're like, yeah, I got you. Yeah. We're going to make this play. Like, yeah, that's what she was. And she was dealing. Yeah. So
all right, good. Let's talk about the game two.
Yeah.
McKenna Reed. Let's talk about McKenna Reed for a second. She was the freshman pitcher that had everybody's attention last year. Everybody's talking about McKenna Reed, how she's going to be the next replacement of Catherine Sandercock. Florida State, she's going to pick up right up. She got all this experience against big teams in the World Series, National Championship. McKenna Reed is the one. This year, not quite that story, right? Like she's struggled quite a bit. Hasn't had like a complete outing yet. Hasn't had like a clean outing. And then game two, she came out and looked lights out. What'd you see from her in those first, what, five innings?
Yeah. Yeah. She was looking really good. She was dealing. She was just feeling herself. First couple batters, like maybe a little shaky, just getting behind in counts quickly, but like quickly recovered. Her defense had her back. I think that was what I realized most was it kind of just took her a couple hitters to really settle in. And once she got rocking and rolling, like she was moving. She started getting ahead in counts too, kind of similar to Jaylee Wright, just opposite, right? Because with McKenna Reed, she throws up in the zone more. And so what she was doing was just getting ahead of hitters using that upward part of the plate and then making them swing outside of their zone. And then she flips in the off speed as well every so often too. So just that velo differential, because she tops in there too, 68, 69. Sometimes 70 as well, but she throws hard, right? And if she can, especially coming from the left side, if she can establish something going into right-handed hitters, or, you know, even that lefty-lefty matchup sometimes is hard. So she was just also really effective, and that was the best I'd seen her start. And I want to say she had a complete game. She didn't have a complete game because we did see the pitching change in the fifth inning. Allison Royalty came in, only lasted two batters, but McKenna Reed quickly came back in and responded, shutting Duke down. Duke did score a couple of runs at that time with Royalty getting the lead off two batters that she faced on base, but really just settled back in there so smoothly did McKenna Reed.
So. Yeah, that pitching change, I'm watching the game and I'm like, what is going, why? Like, it's not like she's putting in Catherine Sandercock like Coach would do last year. Allison Royalty has had her struggles this year too, but McKenna Reed having the best game that we've seen her throw all season and then gets yanked. I'm like, dang, that's like, this could be good. This could be really bad. And then Royalty comes in and doesn't do her job and gets yanked, like you said, after two hitters. And to me, that short leash tells me that maybe Coach wasn't 100% sold on making that change. I know, you know, you've told me, I know from you that they are very analytical. They read a lot of numbers, but at some point you've got to trust your gut and the feeling of the game. And I think that's when Lonnie's gut started talking to her like, hey, put the girl back in, but I want to go to McKenna Reed. Like if I'm a pitcher and I'm rolling, I'm going, best I've looked all year, then I get pulled. All right. Well, now I'm happy we're winning. I'm happy I had a good outing, but I'm probably not very happy that I got pulled, right? This is my game. Then the new pitcher comes in and is not doing good. Mentally, I'm like, all right, I'm done. I did my job. Now I'm mad that this pitcher. And then 2.5 minutes later, you're back in the game, right? Like, how do you, that mental gymnastics you're doing from, you did great, you're benched, somebody comes in, they're doing bad. Now Duke's getting the lead or closing the lead, I'm coming in, giving up some runs, and then she settles back down. That was a lot for McKenna Reed to take in, and she was able to hold her own at the end. So,
yeah, I agree. And just real quick, it was funny because before Lonnie made that change of Allison Royalty coming in, we were literally heading into that inning, and from the booth, I was like, I think we're going to have a pitching change. And my play-by-play was like, why? I was like, because the way Coach O works is she's so strategy-based, and we talk all the time about Florida State pitching by committee, that the goal here is McKenna Reed was probably, I'm assuming, right? I'm speculating is what I say, but McKenna Reed was going to get two times through the lineup, and she did, and that was her going into the fifth. So Royalty came in the fifth inning for that number nine batter second time through the lineup to then get the top of the order, and just didn't go in her favor. So Coach O was like, nope, I can't listen to the numbers right now. I got to go back to my gut. Mm-hmm. So it was cool. It was a cool conversation to have, especially after the game when I got to ask Coach of those questions. So. Yeah.
Well, they pulled out the win. Huge win for them. I don't know if this – I feel like that could have been a turning point for Florida State, honestly. I mean, just having a good pitching performance, coming out and getting the win, even though they didn't win the series, drop game three, I think it could be a turning point for Florida State moving forward.
So you want to get into your Tar Heels and that Clemson matchup?
We talked about in the open how offensive UNC is. They can hit. They can steal. They've got power. They've got speed. But they were shut down on the weekend offensively. And they were shut down without a Valerie Cagle in the lineup. I didn't see her in the dugout anywhere. They said that she was feeling under the weather. Best wishes for Valerie Cagle. The sport needs her to be healthy. Hopefully she's taking care of herself and we'll see her soon. But with that being said, if I'm North Carolina and I'm going against Clemson and there's no Valerie Cagle in the lineup, I'm just like ready to roll. Let's go. Let's go after this team. Let's put it to them. This is our chance. Like, we got lucky. The National Player of the Year from last year isn't going to be here this weekend. So let's take advantage of it. And they didn't. They couldn't. I think Reagan Spencer in the circle looked great for Clemson. And I think that's what we've been looking for Clemson. Do they have a number two? Millie Thompson's been that person, but up and down, right? Sometimes she is, sometimes she isn't. Reagan Spencer's been around. And I think she really solidified herself as the number two for Clemson. So that was good to see. And they looked like they were having fun, Clemson was. And I know you were calling games, so I don't know how much you got to see, but you've seen Carolina play, and they're an emotional team, right? Like, they're always up and celebrating and, you know, just having the best time ever, which, I mean, if you're hitting like they are, that's fun. But I didn't see any of that from them this weekend. They got down early in all the games, and it was just flatlined.
And you can't do that. You just can't. The season is a roller coaster. You've got to like ride it like steady Eddie. You can't be like up and down, up and down. You've got to be just like coasting with the wave, you know?
Right. Like we talk about Duke, the consistency they have. Yeah. Like they're not too high, not too low. And I think Carolina got way too low this weekend. In game three, it was Britton Rogers who started, didn't record an out, gets pulled. They watch her videotape her going into the dugout. Corey Lyon gives her a high five. Not a single teammate turns around and greets her to the dugout. Kinnaray Dark comes in, gets two outs, gets pulled, goes in the dugout. Exact same thing. And as an alumni, I'm calling them out on that stuff, because it made me mad.
How you really feel.
It made me like, come on, guys. Like, I don't care if they went up there and threw six balls over the backstop. That's your teammate. You know, we got to change. You just can't be happy when things are going your way.
Yeah. Well, clarify too. I think there's such a misconception with that kind of stuff. Like, it's not a high five, good job. Like, we know maybe you didn't have a good outing, right? I think that would probably be the most obvious thing. We're all competitors. Like, we know what good and a little bit more poor is. It's like more of a touch of, hey, you're good. We got your back.
We got your back. That's
like
what it is.
We got you. And it's not on you. It's on all of us. And that's what those touches, those high fives are for. It's not like a, hey, good job after you just come in the dugout, striking out, right? It's like, no, that was terrible.
Right.
It was like, hey, you're still in this. You're still going to have an opportunity. And if you don't, somebody else will pick you up. So
that's a great point. Great point. It's not like, hey, you couldn't record an out. Great job out there. Loved your stuff. No. It's, hey, we're going to pick it up from here. We got you. Exactly. You didn't have your stuff today, but you know what? There's 19 other people on this team, and we got
you. Why it's a team sport, right? Mm-hmm. So I like it.
But you know who did show up who used to wear a Carolina jersey was Alex Brown for Clemson. She went 5-for-10 against her former team and a couple home runs. I think she was looking forward to this matchup for sure. And she looks good in that leadoff spot. We've seen Mackenzie Clark in that for years, and now Alex Brown's taken over and She was doing it this weekend.
Yeah, I agree though, real quick, with just your one statement about like if you're UNC, you're going into that game or that series, like, oh hell yeah. Like Cagle's not in the lineup. Like fire me up. And I think it says a lot though right now about Clemson, because I mean, I'll be the first to say I was questioning their depth and to be able to do what they did against a very good team, especially a very good hitting team right now, like UNC, they're still in the midst of a lot of change. Like it really is still their first season under a new head coach and like just a lot of things moving and shifting, but to be doing what they're doing, performing like they are, says a lot. But for Clemson to be able to come in with a team like this, hit that was hitting like UNC was going into that series, like it's pretty cool to see, because I didn't think Clemson was really leveraging their depth. So
yeah. No, there was a lot of question marks there. And to keep Carolina to just two runs on the weekend, good job, Clemson. You got to tip your cap to them. And I'm glad you brought up the fact that Carolina, this is still, quote unquote, a new team, new coach, a lot of transfers in, out. We've had a lot of success early, but, you know, let's cut them a little bit of slack. They're still learning and growing.
Absolutely. Well, talk about St. Patty's weekend, right? How about the frickin' Fighting Irish? Notre Dame, like, oh my Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Georgia Tech, Notre Dame with the series. Georgia Tech took game one, which if I had to have chosen a team, like, I would have, I think, thought Georgia Tech would win that series, like, leading into it, because Georgia Tech just on fire, right? So went into game one hot. They beat Notre Dame 7-5. Really good game, though, back and forth. And then game two, Notre Dame came back and won 6-3, tying the series. So just crazy stuff. Karina Gaskins in game two, it was cool to see her come through clutch because she's one of the best hitters for Notre Dame, but hadn't been getting pitched to a lot, had been getting significant walks throughout the season. Game one, Anna Mangini hit a two-run walk-off, which is awesome. And then just kind of seeing again the continued fight. And that was a really tough game for Georgia Tech. And so to get the walk-off win, right, in the bottom of the seventh, like, huge. And I just, like, made a note to myself. I'm like, that's what dreams are made of, you know? And then going back game two, Karina Gaskins, Notre Dame closing the door. It's like, oh, okay, wait, like, we're still, you know, nothing is easy. Nothing's a walk in the park. So.
Yeah, I think it was a great matchup between these two teams. I don't know if I was expecting how close and how well fought by each side it was going to be. But I think Addison Amaral, who hits behind Karina Gaskins, had a lot to do with Gaskins' success and her being able to make a significant impact on the games this weekend. She did a great job behind her protecting Gaskins, and we're starting to see a little bit more depth from Notre Dame, not just Karina Gaskins, where teams can just walk her and put her on first base and get out of an inning, but we've seen a lot more from that team this weekend. And I think both teams deserve a ton of respect for the fight they showed on both sides. When they were down, they were coming right back. There was no quit in either team. It was a great weekend of softball.
Agree. And, like, you have all these typical heroes, right? So, like, typically for Notre Dame, it's Karina Gaskins, and she's so good. But then you had, like, other production with Addison Amaral doing great in the box. But then, of course, for Georgia Tech, you have Mallory Black. Like, she's having a stellar senior season. And then in game one, for Emma Mangini to come back in and just say, nope, it doesn't have to be Mallory Black all the time. It's going to be me, and I can do it too. Again, says a lot about the depth that is Coach Morales's lineup right now with the Yellow Jackets. Obviously have so many home runs, but I love the back and forth battle. So hats off to Emma Mangini. Hats off to Karina Gaskins, Addison Amaral. Really good 1-2 punch right now for Notre Dame. Mangini for Georgia Tech. Game three, that was a tough one. Back and forth battle, back and forth battle. And then Notre Dame getting the victory. Mm-hmm. So that one shook me a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, the way Georgia Tech's been playing, like you said, we didn't expect this necessarily, but Alexis Loggenslaughter in the circle for Notre Dame stepped up big time.
She did. And let's just talk, like, her last name is a handful. Or a mouthful.
It's like I think it'd be like a beer, Loggenslaughter, like you would, like a German.
I mean, it makes
pub
sense.
Or something, right?
Like an Irish pub.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take a pint of your Loggenschlager, please. But anyway, she was legit. We've seen Michaela Caster just be the ace for Notre Dame usually, but she stepped up 10 2/3 innings. And I think she exposed Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech played Georgia in the midweek, right? Mm-hmm. They faced Lily Backus for Georgia, who's a transfer for UNC.
Yeah.
And they didn't look great against the changeup. They lost that game. They played well, but they lost the game. They didn't look good on the changeup. And then going against Notre Dame, more changeups. And they're making, like, weak contact and foul ball outs, like little pop-ups and foul territory on changeups and getting out. So I expect that Coach Morales and her staff this week will be focusing on hitting the off-speed. Because if you're going to be hacking like they do and hitting all these bombs, you're going to have something exposed eventually. And I think we saw a little bit of that with the changeup, and Notre Dame took good advantage of it and had good timely hitting. It was a great series. Notre Dame took it.
I don't even know. Maybe I'm just trying to think if I've ever had 18 runs score. Actually, I lost one time 17, I think, to three.
Yeah.
And
It
that's all I
happens.
remember.
It happens.
It
I think
happened.
Pitt, they have a new head coach. They're going through some rebuilds, but Virginia Tech was coming off of a midweek loss at Charlotte. So they may have come out with a little extra fire under their butts, and I think there may have been a little extra motivation to make up for that loss, which Virginia Tech's great at home, but we've seen them struggle a little bit on the road, and the talent they have, there's no reason for them to be losing midweeks.
Agree.
So I think there was a little extra fire, and Pitt just happened to be the collateral damage from that in game one.
Get your butt beat midweek to a game you shouldn't lose. Come back with an absolute vengeance, fire under your
Yes,
ass for sure.
yes.
18-0 says that. So, and then Virginia Tech quickly also responded, securing the series. They won game two, 8-4. However, it was a better game from Pittsburgh's perspective. So, did not one get run ruled, and two scored some runs. So, definitely having some good offensive production. And then game three, Virginia Tech got the sweep. They beat Pitt 9-5. They did do the run rule on Sunday in that last game. So again, just really good stuff, I think, from Virginia Tech responding after that tough loss for Charlotte. 12 home runs on the weekend. And anything else on them? Kind of just moving forward, looking ahead. Everybody loses games they shouldn't, right? Everybody does it. We've all been there. So,
I think the road only gets harder for Virginia Tech here on out.
correct.
So I think they took care of business this weekend and they're going to move forward.
Correct. And I think real quick, one thing too, that going back to even the Florida State Duke series, that was such an important series for Florida State because they don't get to play Virginia Tech this ACC conference play. They don't get to play Clemson in conference. Those are the two teams, and they're two of the best teams in conference right now. So for Florida State to not get those games, that's tough. So Virginia Tech, definitely a good competitor right now in the ACC. Love it.
Yeah, they're technically number one. They're 9-0 in the ACC.
Was that a pun? They're technically. Just kidding.
It is now.
It's late. I'm having a michelada. It's okay.
We're good.
We're one for the puns. Yeah.
Here we go.
So.
All right, next game we're going to go to Syracuse, Virginia.
Yeah.
A little surprising here too. Syracuse came out and took care of business Friday, beating UVA 6-1. Madison Knight in the circle went the full game, one run on three hits, and only gave it up to their leadoff and their number two hitter in the lineup. Everybody else was silent. It was Jade Hilton and Bella Cabral for Virginia that put the ball in play and got on base. Everybody else couldn't touch Madison Knight. So I think Virginia, they didn't have their bats going, and Syracuse came out to play and they took game one.
Yeah, that one did surprise me. I had to go back like on my ESPN app just to make sure like the score. I was like, did I see that correctly? Just because I just want to make sure that I'm not giving bad info. But while on the topic of some drinks, you have Laudon's Lager, who you thought sounded like an Irish beer, fitting. I think Cabral, if that is exactly how we say it, kind of sounds like a nice classy red wine. So I
Oh,
don't know, but
okay.
maybe.
Yeah.
So
I like
yeah.
I would order that.
Right? Like I'll have the filet mignon and a glass of Cabral. I don't know.
I'm a ribeye. I'm not ordering a filet. Come on
Oh,
now.
okay.
But
My
the
bad.
Cabral or
The Cabral,
Cabral or
just
dang.
like a fancy
I
something. It sounds, whether it's
like it.
wine, maybe a dish.
Sophisticated.
Yeah. So, and then Virginia Tech did quickly, or I'm sorry, Virginia quickly responded, getting game two. So responding well to Syracuse getting game one, which again caught us by surprise because, hey, you just never know. You look at trends and stuff, and Virginia was rolling. But they did come back, get game two. Leah Boggs had a 2-run home run, which was the difference in the game. They only won 2-1 and then got the win. Virginia got the win without Bigum in the circle, which is crazy. So you had Julia Cuozzo, then Courtney Lane. They combined in the circle. So good stuff on that. Virginia also won the last game of the series. They clinched the series on game three Sunday. They beat Syracuse 7-2, scored 6 runs in the first 2 innings. Something to be said about scoring first and scoring often. So when you score first, you automatically apply the pressure to the opposing team, making them kind of press in those at bats and just feel that pressure pretty immediately. So I like what Virginia did there responding to Syracuse taking game one. Shockingly. So,
Yes. Yep. Virginia found a way to get a series win, 2 out of 3. It's hard to sweep anybody. But I think Madison Knight for Syracuse did a good job of securing one game for them. And Cavaliers, they had really high expectations last season. I think those rolled into this year. So still a lot of game left, a lot of season left, but it's time to, you know, when you can get a sweep, get a sweep. But it's hard to get a sweep.
Agree. And then doing it, though, without Bigham in the circle. Right. Interesting, because she didn't even pitch much that game three through a couple of innings at the end. Yeah. And so it's just like, okay, like other arms, you know, depth and stuff. That's gonna be it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
All right. How about the Wolfpack? They were out of conference this weekend and had a great weekend, I would say.
Yeah,
their first game against Northwestern, who, you know, multiple World Series appearances, great. Traditionally great program, beat them 1-0. 1-0 ball games. I love 1-0 ball games because it sets you up for championship big games down the road, and they were able to pull it off. And they won it with only one hit. It was a solo shot by Amanda Hassler, and that's all they needed because Madison Insko in the circle was lights out for NC State. She got out of some jams because Northwestern left 7 runners on. I mean, she was able, her defense picked her up. She didn't lose confidence. They just needed that one big bomb, and they were holding Northwesterners shut out. So I think that's a big confidence boost for the Wolfpack.
Love it. I love that NC State is doing what they're doing right now. So they're losing some just randomly, right? And some tough games, maybe some ACC games too, that you're like, dang, you could have really had this one. But then coming back and responding so well in some of these other games. And I just love what Lindsay Lefwich is doing over there. And I'm excited to see kind of what's ahead as she continues to stay comfortable. Because imagine somebody completely taking over a program with not the ties and stuff that she's used to, right? She was somewhere else for so long.
And no head coaching experience.
Exactly. And then coming in immediately and making the impact that she is. It's so exciting. They also beat Michigan State 3-1. They did lose to Minnesota 14-4. And like, it's just one of those like, oof, it hurts a little bit. Because that's a tough loss. Like, that's just tough when you're a part of the game. You're like, okay. This is getting a lot, you know, whatever. We've all been there. Like, we've all been there on both sides, right? At the field where we've been the one beating other people's butt, and then we've been the ones getting our ass kicked sometimes, and it's hard. But then they took the loss to Minnesota and then played South Carolina. So they lost to Minnesota on Saturday, then played South Carolina on Sunday. I'm sorry, but South Carolina is good. And then, of course, they play SEC, so they see consistently good competition, of course. We know that, but... they beat South Carolina 4-0.
Yeah, and South Carolina threw everything they had at them. And again, it was Madison Insko in the circle went the distance, which we definitely don't see much of in the SEC and ACC, especially when they play each other. Two hits, one strikeout, and no walk. So defense, solid once again, not giving up free passes. They scored one run in the top of the first. Held that lead until they added some insurance in the top of the 7th. And I tell you what, South Carolina, top 25 team, got beat by NC State. And NC State is making some noise. I wouldn't want them coming to my regional in the postseason right now. I think they're doing good things.
Okay. SEC top 25 win. Oh, Wolfpack. Let's go. Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Cheers.
All right, Boston College, they played in the Eagle Round Robin tournament. So they beat Holy Cross on Friday 3-2. They beat Iona 3-0 on Saturday, and then they beat them again on Sunday 9-1. So they run ruled Iona the second time, and then also beat Quinnipiac. I feel like that's one of my favorite words, schools, to say the name of, Quinnipiac.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Hopefully I'm saying it right.
Like, you got that one.
Okay, thanks. Spelling it is, you know, I'm like... really trying to sound it out, kind of like I do with Mississippi sometimes. I still hit the M-I-S-S-I-S-S, like, you know, like,
you don't do the crooked letter.
No, but I actually don't for Mississippi. However, when I spell the word tomorrow, I still do like the Tom or Row trick. So, you know,
never heard that
it's
one.
It's okay. So,
okay.
But a couple highlights from the Boston College games. Abby Dunning in the circle. Britt, I know you're a fan of her.
Huge.
You've brought her up multiple times. She's looking so good. She threw a complete game no-hitter, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts, and she also reached the 300-strikeout mark on her career. So good. Mm-hmm. She's been really fun to watch. So.
Yeah, she's been leading this team in the circle, and I think she's going to upset some teams in the ACC this year. I'm not sure if they're going to go through and sweep the rest of the ACC series, but I think they're going to take one. I don't care who they're playing, but with Abby Dunning in the circle, they can take one from everybody. They're 17-8. I think she's their ace. She's proven herself, and she continues to do that. And Boston College has got something big to work around.
Awesome. Love it. Well, congrats, Boston College. Good weekend. Congrats, weekend. Abby Dunning. Great weekend. Yes. Fire me up. So Louisville, they played South Dakota on Thursday, 1-8-5. This one is kind of similar to me to NC State. So playing in a tournament, South Dakota, they got the win there, 1-8-5. Then they played Illinois on Friday and lost 6-0. Then they responded to that loss against Illinois on Friday, and they played Michigan on Saturday. They beat the Wolverines 12-4, run rolling them in five. So it's like, if you know you can beat a team like Michigan, run roll, you know you can beat a lot of people, right? Because Michigan is just historically such a great team. It doesn't matter who they are right this minute, because when you have experience, when you have the tradition, a lot of times that helps no matter what it's looking like. So,
yeah, that's the second time they beat them this year.
Yeah, like so, I was really
ACC,
impressed.
Big Ten. I mean, come on, guys. ACC, I'll have to look at those numbers, but this weekend we're beating the SEC, Big Ten.
We're beating everybody.
Let's go.
ACC versus everybody. So, yeah. So they lost to Illinois Friday. Then they responded beating Michigan Saturday. And then they played Illinois again on Sunday and then beat them 5-4. So it's like, okay, that must have been just a fluke. Like one of those things as a player, you're so frustrated because you're like, dang, when you know you can beat a team, you're like, I really should have had that other
game. And those
game
games
too.
Matter at the end they of do. The year. Then when you're talking regionals and getting into postseason, and those games matter. And it's so hard to, you know, show up every game knowing that that one game could be the reason the selection committee does not put you in the postseason. But you have to have that mindset every game, no matter who you're playing, that that could be the one that the selection committee circles, stars, and that either you're not hosting, you're not a top eight seed, or you're not getting in. So every game freaking matters. And it's got to be something that you are just so competitive as a player that you're not going to drop games that you've proven that you should win. Yep. But Louisville, we've been looking for some consistency, so I think we're getting there. I think we've seen some good help from Daisy Hess, the fifth-year senior. She's continuing her stellar career. The transfer, Chelsea Mack, Riley Frizzle, the transfer from Mizzou, Chelsea Mack, a transfer from Kentucky, Paige Garrity, the top of their lineup, 1-5, 1-4. I mean, they look good. Paige Garrity, also a transfer, even though she was there last season. But they lost a lot. We talked about it before with Sarah Gordon, and AC Player of the Year, and Corby Otis. So they've brought in some players, and I think it's going to take a little bit of time for these transfers and just building what you need to find that consistency. And I think Louisville is on their way there.
Agree. So definitely impressed with the Cardinals this past weekend. Dropped the one game on Friday to Illinois, but overall really great weekend for them as well. And love more than anything how they responded to that loss, coming back, beating Michigan on Saturday, and then playing Illinois again, getting another opportunity, securing a victory. So a couple big swings, like you mentioned, Britt, a couple of key players for the Cardinals, and then a couple of clutch hitting moments. So looking at our RPI for this week, we had some the re-ranking, right? That's going to happen on a weekly basis now. So this week we had Clemson coming in at number 6. They were previously 11, so that's a nice little jump for them. Virginia Tech coming in at 13, Duke 19, Florida State 23, Louisville is 36, NC State is 46. So definitely some movement, I think, mostly for the better. A couple, no, actually everybody getting better except for Virginia Tech actually did go down. So they were previously at 5.
After sweeping.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my issue with RPI, right? None of these mathematical things in any sports are perfect. The selection show just came out for men's and women's basketball, and there's all some of it just doesn't make sense. And Virginia Tech to sweep, even though they did lose Charlotte, I don't think they should go from number 5 to 13, but that's just me. But none of it's perfect. But that's why it matters to win games that you should win. But NC State, I like they moved up from 60 to 46, getting right on that line.
That's good stuff. I love it. That win against South Carolina, it definitely helps. So
absolutely.
Go Wolfpack. I'm here for it. They're our sleeper team right now. So really good stuff. Looking ahead, you've got this week, we've got some midweek games. South Carolina is going to be playing at Clemson Wednesday. That's going to be a great one. I agree.
Texas, I'd love to be there. That crowd at McWhorter Field is going to be nuts.
We should make a trip at some point, but
I'd love to. That'll be a good one.
It will be a good one. Texas is going to be at Florida State on Wednesday. That one's going to be on ACC Network, so that one's going to be good as well. Virginia Tech at Alabama Friday. Ooh.
ACC's been playing a lot of Alabama.
Yeah. A lot of Alabama. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I was going to say Georgia and just some other ones. Even Charlotte, like, even though they beat us a couple times, like, I like it because you're just putting yourself out there. They're good teams. So good stuff, good stuff. For ACC matchups this weekend, you got Syracuse at Boston College, NC State at Notre Dame, Georgia Tech at UNC. I'm excited for that one.
Yes.
Clemson at UVA. I'm excited to see how the Tigers hit against Bigham. That's going to be good, too. Duke at Louisville, Florida State at Pittsburgh. So, any last thoughts, Britt?
Yeah, that Georgia Tech UNC series, you always talk about how short that porch is in Chapel Hill.
I mean,
these two teams are going to, there's going to be some bombs. We've seen some struggles in the circle from UNC. If UNC can get somebody that has a good changeup, they may have a shot to keep the ball in the park more often than not, but I think the ball is going to be flying in Chapel Hill, and it's going to be a fight. And it's going to be a fight. That's going to be a good one.
The ball's definitely going to be flying in Chapel Hill. I'm sorry. Like, it just always does. So not in a bad way, but, you know, like, it is a pretty short porch. So not mad about it. I told you, I said this week, and I was like, I'm a, you know, how they say girls, girl, like, I'm a hitter's girl.
There you
I'm
go.
I'm going to make it a thing.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, so awesome. Well, thanks, guys. It's going to be a fun one, but thank you guys for joining us. Of course, as always, if you have any comments or suggestions of topics or teams, things that you want covered, let us know. Leave your suggestions in the comments. So until next time, otherwise known as next week, thank you guys so much for joining us on episode 7 of Up the Coast with Alex and Britt. Bye.
Cheers, Alex.
Cheers, babe. Good stuff.